And there we have it. And I was just talking with, you're here at 90. Let me start this over. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is your Fusion Funk Meister here. Just got through listening to something from Live in Leverkusen, Billy Cobham and company. I believe that the guitarist on that particular song is with us this morning, John Scofield, who will be one of the headliners at the Kansas City Jazz and Heritage Festival Memorial Day weekend. John, are you there?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay. Hi. How are you doing this morning?
Great, great. It's beautiful spring morning here in New York.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's not doing too bad here. I just say wait 2 or 3 days and you'll get the weather we had here in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. It's going to cool off, I think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, as I was illustrated through some of the music I played this morning so far, it's really more of an indication of when I got introduced to your playing from the time that you played with the George Duke Billy Cobham Band. And we can talk more about what you've done since then. But how did you how did guitar become important to you enough that you decided it was time to make music your profession?
Well, I started with music when I was 12, and I got really into it. It was in the 60s when rock and roll was happening and soul and all that stuff, and it just took over my life and became my main interest, and it still has been. And so I was, lucky enough, and when I was a kid in high school, I played in bands and all, but I was also getting interested in jazz by the time my late teenage years. And, I just stuck with it. And I grew up in the New York area in the suburbs. And I got to hear a lot of music and stuff. And then I went to Boston and went to Berkeley for 2 years. And then I met Billy Cobham, actually, was one of the first really great players I met. And I joined his band when I was 23.
You know, when I had doing an interview with Billy about 3 or 4 years ago, and we've got a running joke. I like to introduce him as a former percussionist with the St. Catharines Drum and Bugle Corps.
Oh, yeah, he's Drum and Bugle Corps roots all the way.
I think he and his brother Wayne.
I know Wayne. I remember Wayne, the trumpet player, sure.
Right. Now, you left there, and you went on to play with, what did you learn from playing with Charlie Mingus?
Well, that was a great experience for me. I wasn't in Mingus's band. I just did one of his records. Towards the end, it was actually the last record that Mingus played the bass on. It's a record called Three or Four Shades of Blues. And it was just a great moment for me because I loved Mingus's music and had been a huge fan and used to actually go hear him a lot. And, had never met him. But so then when I got the call, I was thrilled. It was right after I played in Billy's band. This was still in the 70s. It was a great, great experience.
That period of 70s, in your opinion, would you say that was probably late 60s on into the 70s was probably one of the more creative times for jazz to evolve from what it was, say, the mid-60s?
Well, in some ways, absolutely. When fusion started and in the fusion years was a great time for that music. And there was a real great audience for it. That's why, because it has to go hand in hand, there has to be an audience. And the fusion bands, starting with, kind of Miles Davis, and then, Weather Report and Return to Forever and Mahavishnu Orchestra and Cobham and George Duke and those guys, and that bunch in the 70s, that was a real special time. And I'm glad I got to be part of that. On the other hand, straight ahead jazz was kind of getting ignored, acoustic jazz. So that was a hard time for those musicians, and they kind of came back in the 80s, and some of the greats of that music that were still around got recognition later on. But so in some ways in the 70s was a hard time for the older style jazz, but it was great for fusion.
Well, do you think the collaborations that artists who played the more fusion or jazz rock, their collaborations with some of the more acoustic jazz artists, you know, that didn't seem to help the acoustic art, the straight ahead jazz or any?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the guys who started fusion, people like Miles Davis and Joe Zawinul and Chick Corea and George Duke and people like that, they were jazz musicians first, and they had invented the music. You know, they had blended R&B and rock and funk with jazz. And then a lot of the older guys sort of jumped on the bandwagon, and it did help them to work, you know.
Well, I'm sure they were fairly open-minded because, you know, I mean, many of them did get onto the whole thing of using, of incorporating pop tunes as part of their music, even prior to, you know, jazz coming out. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, jazz musicians are always looking for new material, you know, and you know, so that's actually is the tradition. You know, all the old standards that we call them, those were pop tunes in the 30s and 40s and
right.
50s, and so it makes perfect sense to try and play songs, you know, that don't have to be jazz originals, and it's actually a lot of fun, and gives a new way to play on tunes, you know, to find some pop tunes and make them into jazz.
I'm looking at some of the people you've played with, and one name that really sticks out with me, and I guess it's because he was another one that was at the forefront of the jazz fusion, you know, the evolution of jazz, and that was Tony Williams. Talk about, tell me, you know, about your experiences with him.
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with Tony a couple of times. I was never in Tony's band, but I played on a few recordings, again, back in the 70s into the 80s with Tony, some gigs, some, you know, special project gigs and concerts. Man, you know, the first time I played with him was at a club called Sweet Basil in New York, and I believe this was 1977. And there was a piano player named Mike Nock who had like every Tuesday night or something in the club, and I was making the gig for a few months. And one night, the normal drummer, regular drummer, was Al Foster. He couldn't make it, and somehow Tony was in town, and Mike Nock got Tony to play this little club gig, you know. And Tony was, you know, a big time jazz star at the time, but he made this gig anyway. That's the first time I got to play with him, and I just remember hearing him play the drums and the sound of the cymbals and the way he touched the instrument is something that you don't really know about until you hear somebody live, you know, in a room play their instrument. Tony was one of the greats. You know, he was a child prodigy. He was not that far ahead of me age-wise, but I saw him as somebody like Miles or Mingus, you know, because of his stature in the music.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in talking with drummer Mike Clark or Lenny White or so many of the other drummers, you mentioned the name Tony. It's like you're talking about a god.
Yeah, you know. They all the drummers, you know, I mean, he was such an innovator, and I'm sure Billy Cobham would have to go along with that too, yeah.
Yeah. So, but you've been working with Modesky, Martin, and Wood, am I correct?
Yes.
And
over the years, I've made a few albums with them, and I work with them. I have worked with them often. They're a great group, and they're an incredible, intuitive band that can play really completely freely, and they have their own system of working together and improvising together that's really unique, and I love playing with them.
But now, you're working with a one configuration with him. Is that with drummer Jack DeJohnette?
Well, I play with Jack in another group. Right now, we've started a new thing called Hudson.
Okay.
That is a cooperative group with John Medeski from Medeski Martin Wood, Jack DeJohnette on drums, myself, and Larry Grenadier on the bass. And that's a new record that's going to come out in June.
Right.
And it's, you know, yet another configuration. And Jack is definitely one of the greats of jazz, too, in there with Tony Williams and all, you know.
Yeah, he was just here. Jack was just here, bass playing in the same.
Yeah, he told me he played. That's right.
Yeah, what, a couple of weeks ago. And you worked with Gary Burton. And I think for a while Gary Burton had one of Jack's early bandmates as part of his group when he had Steve Swallow and Tiger Okoshi. He had drummer Bob Moses.
Wow, yeah. Moses was with Burton for a long time. And, you know, we're all sort of in this, especially, you know, the East Coast area, you know, like Moses from New York, and he played with Jack a lot. They were together in the early days, and then he was also in Gary Burton's band for years and years with Swallow.
Right.
And, yeah, Moses is a great drummer.
Yeah, I think he was the band that he had with Jack DeJohnette was called Compost.
I remember Compost. Oh, I went to hear them. That was a while back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was one of my very first jazz rock records that I had possession of. You know,
I remember Compost. Yes.
Yeah, and then after that, it was Billy and George and you all. And talking with you right now completes. That means I've just every member of the George and Billy Cobham Band has been on the Tuesday Midday Medley here at 90.1. So,
fantastic, man. Yeah. Well, we all miss George so much.
Yeah.
That was a tragic loss.
Yeah, we were supposed to about the week that he passed. He had sent me his last CD, Dreamweaver, with a sticky note saying, you know, call me and we'll set up an interview. And
that's
just so
sad,
unfortunate.
And it seemed so quick that he went, you know.
Yeah. What was it for you? You know, what did you come away with having played with George and, you know, that particular band?
Well, with George, I started out with rock and blues, you know, and I loved B.B. King and that whole sound blues guitar. But then I got into jazz when I was like 18. And then, you know, in order to get into to play bebop, you know, you have to really study hard and immerse yourself in it. And I did. And then I got the gig when I was 23 with Cobham. And so I had to put down my bebop studies and play the music that they were playing. So I really kind of, with George, you know, he was a great funk blues player, man. And so he brought that out of me, too. He just really showed me about playing a melody, playing a soulful melody, and his sound on the synthesizer, you know, was like a great blues singer or he told me an interesting thing. George told me that he modeled his synth playing, you know, that lead bluesy synth playing after Yusef Lateef's oboe playing because he had been a fan of Yusef.
Yeah.
And if you go back and you listen to the old Yusef records when he played oboe, you can hear, you know, where George got some stuff from. George was a friend of mine. He was an older brother, and we had such a great time on the road. We partied together. He was a blast, man, and he was an incredible musician, and I miss him.
Yeah. He, you know, the tributes to him when he passed, I mean, were just from everywhere. And, I mean, and having met him, having had a chance to talk to Corrine whenever we, you know, she was with us.
A wonderful woman. Yeah. That's great. Keep in touch. Very good.
Well, now tell me this. Are you, do you do any teaching? Do you do workshops or master classes or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I do. I do. Occasionally, you know, I'll come out to a town or university gig or something, and they'll want to do a workshop, and I've try and fit it in.
Okay. I read where you had, for a while, I don't know if you still are, you an adjunct professor of music at New York University?
Yeah, NYU has a great jazz department, and I do kind of master classes there. You know, I'm not there every week because I'm on the road so much, but I try to go 7 times each semester and do workshops with the students there.
I believe.
I enjoy it a lot.
I don't know if he's still, and he still does. I know for a while, saxophonist Lenny Pickett was teaching there, too.
Lenny's there.
Yeah.
He's there, and the other Lenny, too, Lenny White.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a great music department.
And for those, for my listeners, those of you who are not familiar with those two names, Lenny White is a longtime drummer, returned to Forever. I'm sure you knew that, but Lenny Pickett is a former lead tenor player for Tower Power and current band leader for Saturday Night Live. He's been there with
him
for a while.
You can't miss him every Saturday.
Absolutely. So what can we look forward to Memorial Day weekend when you come to Kansas City for the Kansas City Jazz and Heritage Festival?
Well, wait a minute. Now, I forget. Is that with Hudson? That's with Hudson, right?
It might be. I don't know if they specify exactly who.
No. I've got so this is funny. I've got so many gigs. Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to look on the calendar. I've got so many different bands, I forget a lot of times.
So you meet yourself. So you meet yourself coming and going.
Memorial Day weekend. It's my group called Country for Old Men.
Okay.
And this is my latest record, which is on Impulse Records, and it's a group that I have where we do old country tunes, but we jazz them up, you know, and we turn them into jazz and funk and all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
And it's Bill Stewart on drums, Vicente Archer on the bass, and a great new talent on keyboard, Sullivan Fortner.
Okay, all righty, that'll work. Well,
it does work. You got to check us out. I think you dig it.
Okay, then. Well, I tell you what, I'll see what I can do about making it there myself. But I tell you, I just want to say I want to thank you for the time you've taken out with my listeners. To talk about your career and some of the people you played with, and see if we can't work up some more music that you are responsible for. So.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for putting me out there. Great to check out the show and be on it, and good luck with all your endeavors.
Well, thank you very much, John.
All right, now take care.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Later on.
Mm-hmm. That was guitarist John Scofield, who is kind of partly responsible for my music education as a younger man, I'll put it like that.